This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Losers whine about their best. Winners go home and strip the prom queen.
Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, the light of Kim Jong-un's eye, my brother Mike.
I don't think that guy has any light in his eyes, does he? Isn't it just like black hole, death,
dark terror? Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Pretty much that, yeah.
Yeah, that's not great, which makes me wonder why you're such good friends with him, Mike. Why are you guys so tight?
The real question is here, should he be seen as a humanitarian? Because he kills thousands and thousands of people every year, but the alternative is living in North Korea. So is he really just freeing them?
Let me ask you this. How are you and him and Dennis Rodman so close? How'd that
happen? I don't know. You know, me and Rodman like to hang it out, cut it up, you know.
You meet people at who knows where anymore.
You know where I'm meeting Dennis Rodman.
I know where you're hanging out. You're hanging out at those places. Yeah, what a week. Mike and I are hoping to bring you some energy this week, although both of us are dead right now. Mike because his whole family is sick. Me because I've been working all day and I'm a little sick, and also it's 1,000 degrees in my house. So if you see me sweating on this episode, those of you who watch on YouTube, that's because I'm very, very hot right now. But maybe that's going to give me some passion, some fire, some blood, some heat in the blood.
It'll be like you're competing.
Talk about, which I never am. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. We're so glad to have you on. This week's episode will review a winning week from the Royals. We'll talk about what this team still needs in order to remain competitive this year. And then we'll preview this week's games. But first, we got another review. We got review in from somebody on Apple Podcasts. Yay! As always, we encourage you to go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We will read it here on the show, and you get to be a star for 5 minutes or so. And that's awesome. We get some funny, some insightful, some great reviews. This one might be one of the best we've ever gotten. It's very well written, and I teach writing for a living, so I know what I'm talking about. This review comes from Brian C. 722 on Apple Podcasts. Brian writes, I've been listening to Royals Weekly for about 3 years now, and these guys give the absolute best Royals comment. Terry, I assume you meant. Great in-depth analysis for both the minor leagues and the Royals. They keep things positive but realistic, are super knowledgeable about all things Royals. They are the first thing I listen to every Monday and Thursday. Thanks for being a Substack subscriber, Brian. I have their post notifications on their Twitter account. Not Threads yet. Sorry, Mike.
Dang it. That's all right, Brian. We'll get you over there, Brian.
You eventually. And you can tell they work very hard to make this show a success. If you're a Royals fan and not listening to Royals Weekly, you're in the wrong. With an exclamation point, you are in the wrong. Of course, you can't hear this to hear that you're in the wrong. But, you know, if you don't listen
Brian's
to the show,
right. Okay.
you ain't living right. Brian's right here. Thank you so much, Brian C722. We
awesome,
really, really
Brian.
Appreciate
thank
that.
You.
Thank you for doing that. Be like Brian. Everybody be more like Brian, okay? Leave an Apple Podcast review and subscribe to the Substack. We're putting out episodes every Thursday. I've put out 2 articles this week. One of them was on, Mike, I don't even remember. Did you read those? I think one of them was on the bullpen.
I read one of them. Yeah, that was the one I read.
Okay. And then we did the weekly wrap up on Saturday yesterday. Earlier today, it came out today. Subscribe to that Substack. It's only $5 a month. You get an extra episode. You get lots of great writing. And, you know, Mike does some stuff too.
Yeah.
Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. You already know that All In Physical Therapy helped turn our mother into the human form of a Sharknado. But what you don't know is that Mom loved her experience there because of the personal attention she got from Tommy and the staff at All In. They guarantee a personalized one-on-one experience to suit the needs of patients recovering from total joint surgeries, sports injuries, and any kind of injury or pain that you have.
I'm thinking of becoming a bionic man. Gonna talk to Tommy about how to get some help with that.
Yeah, you'll need that. All In Physical Therapy is owned and operated by Tommy Frevert with locations in Blue Springs and Lee Summit. But most importantly, they're in-network for nearly all insurance providers.
Gotta be in-network. It's basically the 11th commandment. Right after thou shall keep one urinal between myself and the next private part.
Yeah, when possible. That is the 11th or 12th commandment. 10th commandment, I think. Yeah, I went to Sunday school. If you're a high school athlete recovering from injury or someone bouncing back with a brand new hip or knee, check out the best physical therapy in the KC Metro at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com. Or give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300. Boy, there is not much roster news again this week, and which is really a good thing. We should take that as like a positive sign. It means the Royals aren't getting hurt at the major league level, which is great. Salvador Perez did go down with a strained groin / hip in today's game. We don't know that much about that right now, so we'll talk about that probably on next week's episode, but hopefully it's just a couple days rest for him and he's back in the lineup. We do have something to say on Michael Massey. He has moved his rehab assignment to Omaha, where he's been in a few games and he's hit well so far. Mike, what are your thoughts on what should or will happen when Massey gets back? Who's losing their roster spot? How's playing time going to work? All that sort of stuff.
Well, first, let's say that there's some speculation. There is a chance that Michael Massey is back up with the team as early as tomorrow. Could be after this White Sox series when they come back home. Maybe that makes a little bit more sense. Give him a few extra days. But I think the simple thing is Massey probably becomes your everyday second baseman at that point. I think that was the plan in spring training. He's been doing very well in his rehab assignment. So as long as there's no pain or lingering effects from the injury, he's your everyday guy at second base. The harder part is what happens to the roster here. The 26 man is a tough thing because the logical choice is Nick Lofton to go down. But Nick Lofton's been pretty good in the limited time that he's had, and he's even had a game or two where he was somewhat the hero of the game a couple games ago. So really tough. You know, the other choices, really the only other choice to me is Dairon Blanco. And I hate to see him go because he is so valuable at the end of games. So really that's going to be the choice for the Royals. Do you give up Dairon Blanco and send him down knowing that he helps you so much at the end of games? Or do you send Nick Lofton down knowing that he's been helped you with the bat recently?
Yeah, it makes no sense in my mind to send Blanco down. He's just too valuable at the end of games. Like, he has single-handedly kept them in or won them at least two games this year, maybe three. And it's that sort of ability that a team hoping to scratch out an extra win here or there to be competitive in the division absolutely needs. So I don't see any – I think it's a 2% chance they send Blanco down. I think Lofton's going down, but I think that doesn't make sense, right? Because Lofton is your right-handed bat. Massey, if you're going to give him days off, which they're going to, would likely or most likely to get days off against tough lefties. Who are they going to put in against tough lefties? Adam Frazier? He's also a lefty. And it's like, what's going on here? We're not getting any sort of platoon advantage. You can play Hampson at second. And so maybe that's somebody who would get those at-bats. Then what's Adam Frazier doing is the question. Like, what is his role exactly?
I don't know. Hitting against righties and playing third, maybe? I don't know.
What's Massey doing? Like that's the thing. It's really tough to know what role Adam Frazier has if Michael Massey is on this 26-man roster. We'll see. I'm sure Matt Quatero will get creative with it. I'm sure J.J. Piccola will get creative with it. But to me, I think you're right. The most likely scenario is Nick Lofton goes down. I'm just not 100% sure that's what's best for the team. On the field last week, it was a strong week for the Royals. They went 4-2 with a sweep of the Astros, and a narrow series loss to the Metropolitans of New York. That brings their overall record to 10-6, which is good enough for second in the AL Central. Mike, how do you feel about how the week went?
Well, overall, it went great. You know, you swept the Astros, who do have a very strong lineup. I know their rotation is really hurting right now because of injury, but they still have a very good lineup. And you swept them, and that's fantastic. The week tastes a little bitter because it felt like you were going to win that Mets series. You know, Reagans gave you a friggin' gem today, 6 innings, 8 strikeouts, no runs, and you couldn't capitalize. And again, the bullpen looks a little shaky in giving up that, uh, that win to the Mets. So tough because you want to win the series against teams you feel like you're better than. And I feel like the Royals are on par or better than the Mets. And so that was tough, but 4-2. I'll never scoff at a 4-2 week.
Yeah, last year we would have killed for some 4-2 weeks. I don't even know that we ever had anything like that. So let's not get too high on our horse here. You know, like I'll remember those days. And so yeah, I'm fine with a 4-2 week. But you're right; the bitterness comes in the fact that going into today, you saw Cole Reagans against Jose Buto, and you thought, okay, we have a good chance to win this Mets series, right? The offense comes out and is way too aggressive, which is crazy to me because Jose Buto has some command issues. He'll walk people if you let him walk you. They were not willing to let him walk them, and so they just came out swinging. Buto looked like a Cy Young candidate as well, and part of that was he just had a really good day. He had good stuff today. He deserves a lot of credit for the way he pitched, but part of it is the Royals came out way too aggressive. Were swinging it in bad pitches in good counts. You know what I'm saying? They were up the very first hitter of the game. Mikel Garcia is up 2-0. He swings at a fastball 6 inches off the plate inside. Next inning, Hunter Renfroe gets up. He's up 1-0, swings at a slider that must be a foot off the plate. And it's like, what are you doing, guys? What are you doing? Like, this is a pitcher who wants to walk you, and you're not letting him, right? Like, and so, yeah, they earned that loss today in a lot of different ways. Their bullpen wasn't great. The umpiring pitched in a little awful ball strike calls to sort of end the game there. But, you know, they earned the loss outright as well. So it is a little bittersweet towards the end there, but a 4-2 week is always a good thing, better than a 2-4 week. Mike, quite a few people to talk about as standouts this week. Who was your strong performer for the week?
I'm going to the guy who was my weak performer for last week, I think, Vinny Pasquantino. 8-for-19, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 3 walks to 1 strikeout. That's the Vinny Pasquantino that that we know and love. You put out something today that I have actually been thinking.
And when I read it, I share a lot of thoughts.
I've actually been thinking that too. Even that day when he hit the home run that barely got out, that's exactly what I was thinking was, you know, he's got a couple hits today, but the exit velocities are not very high. And I went and I looked at his average exit velocity. That must have been last Sunday because I think we were getting ready for this show or for last week's show. And I was like, you know, let me take a look at what his average exit velocity was. And it was low then. And I'm just still a little concerned about that exit velocity, the amount of pop that he has right now. But can't deny he had a fantastic week, including the only run that was scored for the Royals today with a home run.
Yeah, our friend Alex Duvall, who's been a guest in the show many times, he tried to reassure me on Twitter. He sort of replied with like, well, his max exit velocity is actually higher than it was last year. He does have one really hard hit ball at like 111 or something this year, which is a good sign of raw power. Alex's theory that it's just a timing issue. He's not catching the barrel very frequently and he's still getting, you know, 95 plus, you know, enough to have some decent results. I'm hopeful for that. I'm hopeful that it's just a timing thing and it's not a little bit of a step back in raw power because of the injury. But he did have a great week this week. You know, if he's a guy who's not going to hit with the major exit velocities, but he's going to have really good launch angle all the time, it's not going to matter, right? Like he's going to still produce really well offensively. He's obviously got the great approach to the plate, 3 walks, 1 strikeout last week. That's great to see. So hopefully this is just the beginning of him getting on a heater right now. He gets that timing down a little bit more and he starts crushing some baseballs. My strong performer of the week is somebody we already mentioned, and that's Cole Reagans. He went out and pitched 11 innings this week. He got 2 starts. The first one wasn't great. He sort of gutted out 5 innings, gave up 3 runs against the Astros, but a very good lineup they have. But this one was, of course, a gem he put out today. So total, he went 11 innings, 15 hits, 3 earned runs, 13 strikeouts, and only 2 walks. The 13 strikeouts to 2 walks is always going to be a sign of great success for Cole Reagans. And he's doing it with a lot of different types of stuff. Today was fastball heavy and they really had trouble hitting that fastball. He could put it in the middle of the plate. They were still missing it. And so he clearly had the right scouting report on the Mets that they were going to struggle with his heat.
Yeah. And the variance in speed on that fastball was a little bit fun to watch too. He sat pretty much 96 most of the day, but when he needed to get it for a strikeout, it'd go up to 97, sometimes 99. He hit 99, 100 at one point. And so it was kind of cool to see him kind of play around with the different speeds on the fastball. And he located it pretty well today too. So that was awesome.
Yeah. He hit 100 at one point today. One of like 7 or 8 starters so far this year to hit 100 miles an hour in a game. And so that was great to see. It was great, strong stuff from Reagans. So hopefully he can continue that run. Hopefully the Royals can keep getting great starting pitching. Not everybody's rolling right now, Mike. Some people are struggling. Who is your week performer for the last week?
Michael Garcia has really struggled. They mentioned it a little bit on the broadcast, or they hinted at it on the broadcast today. He's 2 for 25. Just this week, right? Yeah, he is 2 for 25. 0 extra base hits, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. As you mentioned earlier, he's swinging at pitches he should not be swinging at. And he's swinging through a lot of fastballs or popping them up a little bit, not hitting them hard like he was early in the year. So got to see better from Michael Garcia. Got to see him be a little bit more disciplined at the plate, a little bit better swing decisions. And I think he'll be okay. You're always going to get the good fielding. He can still run the bases and all that sort of stuff. There's still value in a Michael Garcia, even in a week when he's not hitting. But if he's going to be the Michael Garcia we all hope he can be, he's got to start doing more damage when somebody throws him a fastball.
Yeah, it's wild to see Garcia got off to a hot start. Somebody put out that they thought that somebody – I didn't watch the Royals broadcast today. I watched the Mets broadcast on my Yankees. They told me that somebody put out on Twitter that Rex was talking about like how his swing changed, and Ryan will refer to this occasionally, LaFever will refer to this occasionally like, well, he hit those home runs early in the year. That changes the swing, and then he ends up not blah, 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 blah. That has nothing to do with it. His swing is fine. His swing is exactly where it should be. It's his approach at the plate that sucks, right? Like he is swinging. He is chasing at 80 or what was it? In the 83rd percentile in chase rate right now. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean that in a bad way. Maybe I'm wrong there. I can't remember. I looked it up earlier, but now I can't remember. What I mean is he's just swinging at too many pitches on the edges and outside the strike zone right now. And that's his big issue, right? He's not having good plate appearances. Like I mentioned earlier, first at bat today, 2-0, swings at a pitch way off the plate. That is going to hurt you, right? Like when you're like that, when you're too aggressive because you want to get hits because you're slumping, it's just going to get quicksand. You're going to go deeper and deeper into your slump.
And there was an at bat later in the game where they threw somebody, I can't remember if it was Buto, if he was out at the time, but it was a 1-0 or 2-0 fastball right down the pipe, and he stared at it. I mean, he just looked at it, and he's swinging at ones off the plate inside, off the plate outside, up all the time. And, yeah, so he's just not seeing the ball really well right now, I don't think, and that's the results, 2 for 25.
Yeah. Another guy not seeing the ball roll right now, Kyle Isbell, my week performer for the week. He went 3 for 15 with 0 extra base hits, 0 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Not good for Isbell. He just doesn't look real confident at the plate right now. Like Garcia, he's not seeing it well. He's not real confident in the pitches he's swinging at. And as a result, sometimes he's missing pitches that are right down Broadway. He got a 94-mile-an-hour fastball right down Broadway with 2 strikes today and struck out on it. And I'm thinking to myself, it's 2 strikes. You're getting a fastball. It's right down the middle. You should be in swing mode this whole time because you're trying to protect the plate. Why are you missing?
At the very least, you have to foul that pitch off.
You have
to. At the very least.
I mean, he could have been thinking, because Buto does have a really good changeup, he could have been thinking, I'm looking for a changeup here. But still, you have to foul that off. And so you could tell he's not feeling it right now at the plate. And I hate to see that for him because so many fans are doubting his offensive ability. And it's in there, right? He's hitting the ball hard. He's not striking out that much. It's in there. He just has to, you know, find a little more confidence, simplify the game, simplify his at-bats, go back to a very sort of stripped-down, simple approach, and the hits will start to fall. Mike, what was your theme for last week, a week in which we should rejoice because the Royals won?
I went with the cinematic marvel, the masterpiece, the classic film The Rock, starring Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery. And I went with a line from Connery, where he says, losers whine about their best, winners go home, and I'll say shtup because this is a family show, shtup the prom queen, okay? Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, we're no longer in the mode of, well, we did real good, guys. Good job, moral victory. Nope, that's over. That's losers talk, okay? If you're going to be a winner, you go home and you get it done, all right? I talk to a lot of different people about the Royals, some people I work with, some people I coach with, some people, you know, randos in that are friends of mine or whatever. And we talk about, okay, it's good to see them winning. It's good to see them winning, but there's always this pessimism about it, right? There's always this like, well, it's early, or well, you know, they're the Royals, calm down. Nope. That's loser talk. We're not losers. If you're going to be a winner, you got to talk like a winner. You got to act like a winner. You got to be a winner. I'm on board. when I wrote this, we were winning the division. We're no longer winning the division, but if we're going to contend for the division, winner's mentality.
Mike, how come you didn't do that in your best Connery accent? Do it again. Give me take two with a Connery.
Losers whine about their best. Winners go home and strip the prom queen.
That's good. That's a really good Connery. I'm surprised.
I got an awesome Connery.
You're not like, you don't have Connery. A great repertoire of those, but that's good. That was very good. I got him, and I don't even know who else I got. If you got
Nick
Cage, we could do the whole scene, the whole movie, basically.
I can't. I don't have Nick Cage.
I drive a Volvo, a beige one.
A beige one.
I love that movie. I'm going to watch that at some point. I'm going to another classic for mine. I just started watching it last night, and I just thought of it in my mind, so I switched quickly because I forgot to fill this out. I watched The Matrix last night. One of my favorite films of all time, starring my brother Bob. And one of my favorite lines in it is a line from, and it's like a dialogue between Keanu Reeves' character Neo and Lawrence Fishburne's character Morpheus. And Neo says, "So what, you're telling me I'm going to dodge bullets?" And he says, "No, I'm telling you, when you're ready, you won't have to," right? Like, and this is what I was thinking about for last week. I'm like, when the Royals are ready, and it was kind of fits with your theme really well, actually, when the Royals are ready to be the team that they're going to be this year, they won't have to worry about certain things that they're worrying about right now, right? Like, they won't have to worry about the fact that an umpire screwed Chris Stratton out of 3 strikes and 1 at-bat today that really kind of cost them the game, right? Like, they won't have to worry about a lot of the things that you mentioned that people worry about now, right? Which is like, oh, these are the Royals, so they can't compete. Oh, this is that. You know, like, all those sorts of things. When the Royals are ready, those things, or when they're ready, they won't have to worry about those things. Royals Weekly is brought to you by Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Phoenix has all of our favorite things: year-round golf, year-round baseball, and Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Whether you want to buy your dream retirement home or just stay a while and catch spring training, Eric can help you find the perfect house for you. We've known him for 30 years and trust him far more than we even trust each other.
Remember that time you tried to convince me that I was your clone?
Sounds like something, just like something a clone would say right there. That sounds very clone.
Multiplicity.
Sounds very clonish. Eric does long-term rentals for the snowbird crowd and home sales and purchases for those who want to stay a while longer. Are you a baseball player or parent who needs a place in the Phoenix area? Eric will help find the perfect spot for you fast. Want to spend your days shanking golf balls into the great beyond? Eric knows the golf scene like Mike knows a McDonald's ball pit. Loves it in there. Find Eric online at ericoxer.com if you can figure out how to spell his name. It's ericaauxier.com. Or just shoot him a text, that's way easier, 480-383-9745. That's 480-383-9745. Even if you're just curious about what he can do for you, he's 100% no pressure, one of the best people we know.
And he always holds doors open for strangers, sometimes for hours. He's from the Midwest, that's what we do.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
We all know the Royals are flying pretty high right now. That's awesome, and that should be celebrated. But it's still early, and there are still reasons for, if not concern, consideration. But so the Royals have seen some good fortune with health so far this year. None of their pitchers have gotten hurt. Their lineup has been almost exclusively healthy, except for maybe the Salvador Perez thing today. And they've received some good fortune offensively in pitching, with quite a few players outperforming their expected numbers. So, being the wet blankets Mike and I are, we want to consider some things that may need to be addressed by the Royals if they hope to continue their hot start and stay competitive for the whole summer. We'll each offer 3 issues that could be addressed to ensure prolonged success from the boys in blue. Mike, since you are technically older than I, we'll let age go before beauty, and I'll let you go first.
Yes, the wiser elder statesman that I am. Just in our family, though, because, you know, the bar's pretty low. Okay, bullpen depth is my number one concern. I think we saw that today, and I think we talked about it last week. If we can't find some more consistently reliable arms in the bullpen, we're going to end up losing a lot of these games like this, late, close games. Okay, and really, if you think about the structure of our team outside of that bullpen, we're kind of set up to win a lot of those games with the speed that we have. We've got guys who have the ability to hit one out late in a game. We've got Dairon Blanco, the ultimate closer on the offensive side. But the bullpen right now is just, it's crippling at times. And so outside, if you stop for a second and think, outside of MacArthur and now maybe Schreiber, who do you really trust in this bullpen? For me, the answer is not really anybody. It's no one. I don't trust Willis Smith. I don't trust Zerpa necessarily in big time situations. I certainly don't trust Lyles or Sauer. They're both essentially mop up guys. You know, who do you turn to? Who do you turn to? Stratton? Still shaky to me. Nick Anderson, still shaky to me. I'm looking for guys you can really count on. And to be honest with you, like, I love that what John Schreiber has done. I think it's been fantastic. I think the Royals got real value out of a guy and helped him improve on some of the things he was missing. But he's not the guy I want in the eighth inning. You know, he's the guy I want in the sixth or seventh or maybe both. But he's definitely not the guy I want in the eighth inning. So bullpen depth, I think, is something if they're really in contention and want to go out and get pieces, I think they probably do it most aggressively in this spot because, one, it's cheap, and two, it's a huge need.
Yeah, I went with something very similar, which is I think that they're missing swing and miss in the bullpen. They got a lot of guys like Schreiber or, you know, guys who are supposed to be swing and miss. That Schreiber's a guy who's supposed to be a ground ball guy. He's like essentially a ground ball pitcher. They have him. They have MacArthur is kind of a swing and miss guy, sort of, but they don't have that like dominant strikeout pitcher in the bullpen. And sometimes you need a strikeout. Sometimes you really need guys who are going to come in and just miss bats because maybe you're facing the heart of a lineup. And if they don't miss a bat, it's probably going to get barreled or, you know, because the bases are jammed and you need a strikeout or something like that. Like they got in that situation today, actually, and they just don't have anybody to turn to really. I saw somebody online be like, oh, they should have pulled Stratton. And I was like, to put in who, like who are they going to go to in that moment?
Cause I have no clue.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to like say, oh, we've loaded the bases, bring in MacArthur for a tie game when we might need him to close out a game tomorrow or something like that. Like, and so, you know, I understand why they didn't change it, you know, directions there, but at the same time, they don't have a lot of directions to go if they really need a strikeout or they need some swing and miss stuff out of the bullpen. So hopefully they'll be able to address that moving forward. Mike, what's your number two issue? What's another thing that the Royals are going to have to address at some point as they move forward?
Well, first off, it got kind of hard to find these, especially since you had already gone and put these things down. But it got kind of hard to find them because, I mean, overall this year, the Royals, numbers-wise, are very high in many, many, many categories, whether it's pitching or hitting. But the one area on the offensive side that they are not very high in is on-base ability. They're middle of the pack when it comes to walk rate. And the reason why I think that can come back and burn you isn't necessarily the reason I think a lot of people might be thinking. On-base ability for me, the ability to take a walk, I think keeps your offense more consistent. And so I think on days when maybe a pitcher is being really good, or like today is a great example. The Royals couldn't get to Buto today. One of the reasons they couldn't score on him is because they are that type of team. They are a very aggressive team. They don't take a lot of walks. He's the perfect guy where if you have a great approach, a walk approach, then you're going to get to him a little bit more. Maybe you're going to get one or two. Now, he was very good today, so maybe you only get one or two. But guess what? One or two wins you the game today. And so when you got Cole Reagans going, one or two might win you a game. And so that's kind of the thing for me. I think their offense becomes a little bit more consistent if they had a little bit better on-base ability. And, you know, I don't know that necessarily comes from anybody this year. It would take changes in guys because we're not going to go out and add anybody, I don't think. But, and with Michael Massey coming back, that probably actually makes it a little bit worse. And so, yeah, I would really like to see that as maybe something moving forward. Even your best hitter, Bobby Witt Jr., is not a real on-base guy. And so I don't think it's going to change, but it would be nice if it did.
Their leadoff hitter isn't really an on-base guy right now either. To be honest with you.
And since he's been in Major League Baseball, never has been.
No.
He was really at points in the minors, but never has been in Major League Baseball.
That's true. He was up in the 12-13 walk percentage range in minor league baseball, but he's never really hit those heights in the majors when he absolutely could, right? Like if he just took more pitches, he would probably get there fairly easily. But on-base ability, really tough to find. And you're right, Buto perfect pitcher to take advantage of, and we don't talk about this, but there are other things that does too. So if you think about the game today, had they had a more patient approach at the plate, they also would have driven up Buto's pitch count, gotten him out of the game sooner, and maybe they get to one of those relievers that they cycle in, right? Like, because they have to cycle in more relievers, and you're bound to find one who's not having a good day that day. Like, and so that ability to do that sort of thing when it's needed can be really valuable to a team. Another thing that's really valuable that we talk about a lot is what I'm coming with my second issue, and that's starter depth, right? So we know that the starting rotation has been healthy up to this point, but you can only stay so – they're not going the whole season with just these five starters, right? And we may end up with a situation where effectiveness causes us to ditch a starter. Alec Marsh has looked, you know, not great throughout this, you know, start of the season, his first three starts, still very early. But there might come a situation where somebody gets hurt or somebody's ineffective and they got to reach down into AAA for a starter. It's not clear to me who that guy is going to be right now. Jonathan Bolin's pitched pretty well in his three starts. But other than that, Andrew Hoffman's been hot and cold at times in AAA this year and definitely in the past. And so I'm not really sure where that starter depth is going to come from if they really have any sort of rash of injuries in the starting rotation or ineffectiveness or whatever. If they need to reach down for more than one guy, I think they're in trouble. If they need to reach down for one guy, it may not be great, right? So
yeah.
Starter depth for them, we're not really sure of. And they're lucky that they haven't needed it so far, but it's a long season. They're going to need it.
Yeah, it's been really good to see Bolin pitch well in those three outings. We talked about one of them, I think, maybe on the midweek episode this past week. But 10 strikeouts, I think he had in six innings or something like that. Wasn't quite as good today, I believe, is when he went, today or yesterday.
He was still pretty good. He went six innings. I think he gave up one run, had three strikeouts or something like that. He was good today. But we'll see. They're going to need more than just him, for one, and there's no guarantee that translates to Major League Baseball either. And so they need to be prepared to have another four or five guys make starts for them this year. Let's hope that they find a way to find out who those are. All right, Mike, what's your last issue? What's the last thing we're talking about for the Royals here?
Well, we kind of already mentioned him because he was your week performer for the week, but Kyle Isbell. You and I have mentioned this for, you know, a year, 2 years now. Kyle Isbell does not have to be good offensively, but he can't be bad offensively. You know, he needs to be somewhere around 85 to 100, somewhere in there, weighted runs created plus. And he is, let me give you a slash line so far this year, .233 for his batting average, .250 for his on-base percentage, and .326 for a slugging. That's pretty bad, okay? And so we need something offensively from Kyle Isbell. You have to be able to get something. Now, of course, he's giving you the defensive value. Yes, there's base running value for Kyle Isbell, but my gosh, you've got to be able to hit the ball. And you know he had some tough luck stuff in those first couple innings, hit some balls really hard down the right field line that were caught or good plays made on him. But we need some consistent offense from Kyle Isbell. Something, anything down there. Give me a .250 batting average and somewhere around a .300 on base. Jeez.
Yeah, that would be enough from him, honestly. That's all it would really take. I know his expected numbers, at least for a while, were a little bit better than his actual numbers. So hopefully that portends some good outcomes for him. I know his strikeout rate is probably still pretty low, which is good. He needs a low strikeout rate. The walk rate is just insanely low right now. I never understood why he didn't sort of turn himself into the type of hitter who could be an on-base machine, who really like tried to work counts really well and tried to take pitches and tried to use the walk to his advantage, because he doesn't hit the ball all that hard. He's not a bopper. He's not a slugger. And so, you know, find other ways to have value.
He's a slasher that doesn't hit the ball in the gap.
Yeah, and so it's tough. You know, like, hopefully he can find a way to sort of get some more offensive value, get his confidence back at the plate, because, you know, it's not going to do it just to be a defensive player, defensive center fielder. I'm going to talk about my third issue, and it's your week performer for the week, and that's Mikel Garcia. They got to get him on. He can't get the most plate appearances of any hitter this year and be an 80 weighted runs created plus guy. That can't be the case, right? Like, if they're going to compete for the division, they need a leadoff hitter who's actually going to get on base. And right now he's not doing it. And so I think it's just a matter of getting his approach in place, calming him down, telling him to try not so hard, try less, as Ryan LaFever likes to say a lot, because he's just too anxious right now. He's too aggressive. it's too much sling. And as a result, it's not having a lot of great outcomes. And so if he can do something like that, I think he's fine. I don't think they're going to make any change at third. I think they just have to wait out this slump. But that is an issue that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed with Alex Zummel, the hitting coach.
If they decide to move him out of that leadoff spot anytime soon, who do they put there?
They can't. That's why they can't do it. They have no other option that makes sense.
MJ has done it in the past.
MJ has done it in the past. I like him so much hitting in the middle of the order, though, because he has a lot of power potential. The only other option I would consider would be Nelson Velasquez, because he's got a decent walk rate. He's got a good batting average right now. He's going to get on base quite a bit. He might be able to do it in a fairly serviceable way. Obviously, you lose any potential for like stolen base stuff or anything like that. He's not fast. He can't run
like
Garcia.
Stole third the other day.
He did steal third the other day. He's actually not as slow as you would think looking at his body type, but he is not fast. About a 50th percentile sprint speed from him. So, you know, you're going to lose some of that, but I would be willing to give Velasquez a try if they want to move Garcia out of there.
There are no good options, though.
There are no good options.
Not one.
He's the best of bad options. The Royals get a chance to continue their success. That was, I don't know what's going on in my brain.
He needs some sleep, people. He needs some sleep.
Let me start that again. I'm not even going to cut this out. The Royals get a chance to continue their success against the White Sox to start this week with a 3-game series in Chicago before heading home for a tough homestand that starts with 3 against Baltimore. It's Baltimore and Toronto during this homestand.
Hey.
Rough. I'm going to one of those Baltimore games, though. Mike, remind us of who the White Sox are, since we've forgotten.
They aren't very good. They're last in the AL.
Their fans want to forget, too.
Yeah, no kidding. Their fans want to forget. So they were bad to start off. Their roster was bad going into the season. And now it's also hurt. So it's both. They are bad and hurt. They are 2-13. They have only won 2 baseball games this year. Gosh, it's nice to say that that's not us. The first game will be Seth Lugo versus Nick Nastrini, 24-year-old right-handed pitcher out of UCLA. He'll be making his MLB debut, which you and I absolutely hate.
Nick Nastrini. No, yes. Although,
happy for
although,
him.
Although, what's
hate
his name?
Against guys in their first start.
What's
yeah,
his
the
name?
Kid from Houston. Yeah.
I forgot his name now.
Reggetti or
yes, I was thinking of him as Regretti because we crushed him in that game. He was how that outing went.
Relegetti, Reda, I can't remember.
I forget. I just made a great Regretti pun though, so that's good.
Anyway, Nastrini's got a fastball in the mid 90s, a slider, curveball, change. All pitches are great above average by MLB Pipeline. So. But it's his first time in Major League Baseball, so you should not lose, Royals. Shouldn't lose to a guy pitching for the first time in Major Leagues. The second game's a very interesting one because the Royals do not have – or, sorry, the White Sox, because of an injury, and I can't remember who it was to. I'm blanking now, but I saw it earlier today. Because of an injury to one of their starting pitchers, they have an open spot. So Singer, we don't know who Singer is going to be going against in that second game. There has been some speculation that former Royals great – Brad Keller could get the start in that game. He's at AAA with them right now, and it seems to set up for him to pitch that game. So don't be surprised if you see Brad Keller taking the bump in a White Sox uniform against the Royals. That will be interesting. That's the second game.
That would be so wild.
Wouldn't it? Because I didn't figure he'd be in Major League Baseball this year.
You think he'll come out and walk the first hitter just for old time's sake?
I hope so. I hope he does. I hope he comes out and gives up an 8-run second inning like he used to do so often. The third game will bring us Michael Wacha versus Chris Flexen. Great name. 29-year-old right-handed pitcher out of Newark Memorial High School in California. Flexen has struggled this year. 8.78 ERA and a 1.88 whip. He's got a four-seam fastball in the low 90s, a changeup, a cutter, a curveball. At this point, none of his pitches are really working, and that's how you get an 8.78 ERA. He's getting hit hard with just about all the things that he throws. I thought for a short stretch in the start that he had against us the last time he went, he was actually pitching pretty well. But if I remember right, they left him in like in the fourth or something, we scored 7 or something crazy. So, Chris Flexen versus Michael Wacha, I like my chances on that one.
Yeah, Flexen wouldn't probably be pitching, except they need players so badly. Like, they might have already been like, hey, you're getting out of the rotation here, but they need pitchers so badly. After that, the Royals will head home, where they'll start off with the Baltimore Orioles. They're 9-6, second in the AL East. This, you know, this powerhouse lineup, and it just got even more powerful. They added Jackson Holliday, the number one prospect in baseball, to their major league roster since the last time we saw Baltimore. And so they have young stars like him, Gunnar Henderson, Colton Cowser, and then they have, you know, more established guys like Anthony Santander and Ryan Mountcastle, another
Adley Rutschman,
another young, great player for them. So their lineup is stacked full of extremely talented hitters, although some of these guys are struggling a little bit.
Hey, you left off one.
Ryan O'Hearn.
Yeah, there you go.
Also on this team. Oddly, he's not the one struggling tremendously. Santander's not having a good year. Henderson's not doing great so far. So hopefully those guys are still cold when they get to
Kowser
Kansas City.
Kowser is smoking hot right
Kowser
now.
Kowser is just on fire right now. So hopefully they can sort of tamp down some of the offensive success for those guys. The rotation is more hit and miss for the Orioles right now. It's led by Corbin Burnes, who's great, and Grayson Rodriguez, who's great. But Dean Kramer, it is Kramer. We kept calling him Dean Kramer last time, mostly because it's really funny.
Mostly because we're not very mature and it's funny to us.
Also because it's spelled that way. but Dean Kramer, Tyler Wells, and Cole Irvin have all struggled so far this year. I think Kramer pitched fairly well against the Royals, but everybody else is struggling. Kramer and his other starts have struggled. So we'll see what the Orioles can give us.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with the Just About Outside segment, where we talk about something that's interesting to us outside the world of baseball. Mike, what do you got going on? I know it's been illness lately for your family, but what else is happening this week?
Yeah, so when your wife is sick and your kid is kind of sick and you're just stuck at home for an entire weekend, you get to catch up on a bunch of NFL draft stuff. And so this is my annual NFL draft appreciation tweet. I'm so tired, too.
Everything in Mike's life is a tweet. That's all he does is now. Tweet.
And so
he's a teacher. He teaches in tweets.
That's right. Mark and I, since we were just young pups,
15,
we have been really into the NFL draft. We're weirdo draft people and love the excitement of it. Love to know who the Chiefs are going to be taking. It's so interesting now that the Chiefs always pick at the end of the round, round one and so on, that like there's a billion different variables. And I like to go on and do the mock draft simulator stuff, and I know the Chiefs need a wide receiver, and I know the Chiefs need a left tackle. And so I want them to take wide receiver, left tackle with pick one and two. I don't really care which way they do it.
But tell us your guys, Mike. Who do you want at left tackle? Who do you want at receiver?
So, they're picking at 32. So, I think the only realistic guy that I like at left tackle is a guy from BYU, Kingsley Suamatia. Okay, he's still a project, but he's very young. And he's got all the kind of measurables that you want, the athleticism you want. He's still kind of raw, so I don't know if he starts this year for them, but I would love for them to take him. You're only going to get him at 32, though. You can't, any later than that. And he may not even be there then, but that's your only shot. The other guys that are there, I'd say wait till the second round. I wouldn't get them there. If they're taking a receiver in the first round, there's several that I like. If they're taking a receiver in the first round, if that's their plan, I'd trade back, actually. There's just so many good ones.
And pick up Ricky Pearsall. We know you're in love with him.
I'm a big Ricky Pearsall fan, but that's probably high. I say if you get Kingsley in the first round, try and get Ricky Pearsall in with their second pick at 64, if that's the plan. But I like Ladd McConkey there at 32, or if they trade back a little bit. I like Mitchell out of Texas, too. I'm not quite as high on him as some other people are. But I like the Xavier Worthy would be interesting in the Chiefs offense. Imagine a Tyreek Hill type, only he's not as big. He won't be as physical as Tyreek Hill can be, but so really excited for the draft. Really pumped. I've done way too many simulations. I've looked at way too many of those things.
I don't have time for that sort of thing because I'm an adult, but I used to be way more into the draft than I currently am just because
I wish MLB did a better job.
Well, they're getting better at it.
It is.
I get more into that now just because we do this sort of thing. And I just really, it bummed me out when they got real prime time with the draft and it got all like, we're only doing one day and here's a cancer kid story for every kid where for every kid who gets drafted, and it drives me nuts. And it's just, it's all aimed at the most casual NFL fan, and I don't really like that much anymore. And so, you know,
I do really hate that they move that first round to a Thursday.
I hate that. That kills me. I hate that. And I also hate that they just do the first round on the first day, that every story is about a quarterback. And it's like, I don't give a shit. Like, it's not for hardcores anymore. It used to just be for hardcores. And now it's for the casuals. And I can't get as into it because of that. That's fine. I got other stuff I can do. I'm talking about an article that I read on Vox.com that was really interesting to me. And I'm talking about the ideas of it, really. And the idea for me is the idea of finding the balance between self-improvement and contentment. Like the ability to say, like, I'm happy with where my life is. I'm happy with what I'm doing and I'm good. Like, I see self-improvement as an important thing. We should always be learning something. We should always be, you know, thinking about ways in which we can better our lives and so on and so forth. But at the same time, I think sometimes that attitude or that ethos or that disposition encourages people to not be happy with what they are, what they have, where they're at in life, and all those sorts of things. That worries me a lot, because I know when I see a lot of people, and I'm probably guilty of this as well at times, who are like always striving. And as a result, they're sort of always critical of themselves too. It's not a striving that sort of both appreciates what you have in the moment and also is trying to move forward. It's a striving that's like, oh man, I really want to look like this person looks. Like, it's a lot of comparison. You're like comparing yourself to other people, or you're comparing yourself, you know, to other things or whatever, the stuff you have to the stuff other people have. And it's not healthy in my mind. Like, it's actually quite unhealthy. And I read this article on Vox the other day that sort of got me thinking about this. It's called Why It's So Hard to Feel Enough and What to Do About It. If you get a chance, go to Vox.com and read this article. It's really interesting. But it talks about sort of our instincts to compare ourselves to others and to sort of constantly be striving for more and to be better and that sort of thing. And while I encourage that as an ethos, I'm reminding myself all the time that my life is great, that I have a lot of great things. Mike and I grew up with very little in our lives, not in terms of like, we had family who loved us and all that sort of stuff. And that's great. And that helped us a ton. But, you know, we didn't have a lot of money or anything like that. So I've sort of constantly remind myself, hey, you know, 10-year-old me would be just thrilled with what I got going on in life. He'd be like, you are the bomb, you know? And so I got to remind myself of that constantly. So if you're having a hard time with things, you know, remind yourself that you have some things that are wonderful, and then maybe set some goals based on that. But always remind, I like to remind myself almost daily that the stuff that I have is great.
When I talk to my wife about this, especially with regard to how you and I grew up, and like Mark said, our childhood was very awesome. We never wanted for love or food. We had all the things we needed, but we didn't have a lot of extras. And so I always tell my wife, a garage I can park my car in, and more than one bathroom. And I feel like I've hit the pinnacle. Like, a garage I can park my car in, more than one bathroom. Those are huge.
People don't realize this. People who grew up with money don't realize this. Like, the more than one bathroom thing is like the peak for me.
So huge.
It's the peak. I talk to Riggs about it all the time. It's like, more than one bathroom means so much when you grew up with only one bathroom. Like, and so, yeah. I have more than one bathroom, so I have made it in my mind. To 10-year-old me, I am a king. And so that's good enough for me for now. I'll keep working on my goals. I'll keep setting new goals. I'll keep striving for them. But no matter what, if I got more than one bathroom, I'm living like a king.
That's right.
I hope you're all living like kings too. I hope we're all living like kings as the Royals win, what, 6 games this week, Mike?
I think 6. Yeah, that sounds right.
6 sounds good. We'll talk to each other next week. Until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals.